Take your Bibles this morning. I'd like you to return to Deuteronomy chapter 8. Kind of bounced around a little bit in this particular chapter. And I'd like to read a good portion of all of that we've read in the past. Deuteronomy chapter 8, and beginning with verse 10. Beginning with verse 10, it says, "And when thou hast eaten and art..." That's not right, is it? Yes, it is. Deuteronomy 8 and verse 10, "And when thou hast eaten and art full, then thou shalt bless Yahweh thy God for the good land which he has given thee. Beware that thou forget not Yahweh thy God, in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes which I have commanded thee this day. Lest when thou hast eaten and art full, and hast built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply, and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thine heart may be lifted up, and thou forget Yahweh thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage." Jump down to verse 17. "And thou say in thine heart, my power and my might, and mine hand has gotten me this wealth." Verse 18. "But thou shalt remember Yahweh thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto thy fathers, as it is this day." This will be Principles of Biblical Economics, Part 5. In the previous four messages, I've attempted to provide a balanced approach to the biblical perspective on money and wealth. That is, that money in and of itself is amoral. That is, or in other words, money is neither good nor bad in and of itself. It can be used for good or evil, depending upon whether we are using whatever it is that Yahweh has blessed us with for our own or for man's kingdom in general or Yahweh's kingdom work here on earth. Much of it depends simply on the purpose, the view that we have of money and wealth, and the purpose for which we are using it. Now, let me clarify what I mean in using the term Yahweh's kingdom work. Regrettably, when most Christians hear a preacher mention the kingdom work, they interpret that to exclusively mean building up of the local church or contributing to the success of some ministry. That's the kingdom work, after all. And the reason why most Christians do so is because that is also the intent of most preachers when they speak of the kingdom work. Now, although the kingdom work certainly includes the local church and or ministries of different types, that is actually a small part of what the kingdom work involves. Think about it in the following terms. If 10% of a person's increase goes to the work of some kind of ministry or church, what about the remaining 90%? It's often heard that the first 10% of one's increase belongs to the Lord, right? But what about the remaining 90%? Who does it belong to? Now be careful. Because is it not true that when we surrender ourselves to Yahweh and Yeshua, that we surrender all? Isn't that the song that we sing, "I Surrender All"? All to Yahweh I surrender, all to Him I freely give. I will ever love and trust Him, and so forth and so on. I surrender all. That's that song. I love that song. Because that's indeed what we're called to do, to surrender all, right? Isn't that what we're called to do? That's what Luke 9 and verse 23 is all about. We take up the cross, die to ourselves, and live for Him. We surrender all to Him. 100% of everything, including our salary, belongs to Yahweh. He gave it to us in the first place. It was His before we got a hold of it, right? Now, if there is something, anything, that we hold back, then we have yet to surrender ourselves to Him in the first place. Because it takes everything, including our salary. Now, here's the point. The first 10% of our income, or our increase specifically, is easy. Or at least it should be. We automatically know where it goes. That's how, that is how it's to be used. Right? That should be a given. That should be the easy part. But the remaining 90% goes to, or should go to, the same ultimate end, that is, building His kingdom. Now, it's kind of going in two different directions in a sense, but it's just two different avenues toward the same purpose. If we have surrendered all and we are doing everything that we do for Him and for His kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven. Now, hopefully you see the point. Your household, your home, your children, your life is or should be the kingdom as much as some ministry or church is. And yet, for the majority of Christendom, it seems that we've just limited the kingdom work to the church, to the four buildings and what comes out of the four buildings of the church. In fact, it could be argued that it's nine times our home, our lives, our family, what we do in our homes and from our homes is nine times more kingdom work than is some ministry or church. After all, 90% of your income or your increase goes to building the kingdom in and through your life and home, while only 10% goes to building the kingdom via some church or some ministry that you decide to give that amount to as you give it to the Lord. The fact is, when we understand the ecclesia biblically, your home and the home of other local community Christians is much more the ecclesia than is church on Fridays or Saturdays or Sundays or whenever it is any particular group happens to believe the Sabbath is when they meet. Much more the ecclesia than is when we meet and come together as a group of people, different families. The point being, when I speak of money or wealth for the kingdom, I'm talking about much more than just money for a church or for some ministry. Much more than just the 10% that's taken from the top at the beginning that's given to those kind of things. But for the kingdom, what I'm talking about, when I'm talking about money in this respect of this particular series, I'm talking about the kingdom that begins in each of our homes and expands from there. In fact, the kingdom is not so much to even expand from. And it's taken me several years to come to understand this. But the kingdom is not so much to expand from the local church gathering as it is from our homes. Again, when the term ecclesia is understood to be more than just the four walls of a church building where the ecclesia gathers on once, twice, or three times a week for fellowship. And it's to happen from our homes through, of course, our example, our witness, our Christian impact upon society, and, of course, Lord willing, through our children and our grandchildren as well. Therefore, this series is devoted to prospering not so much the local church or ministry as it is your homes, our individual homes, for the sake of the kingdom. In a much greater way, probably, or at least should be a much greater way, have a much greater impact than even the local church gathering itself has. It's to be happening through our homes and through us as individuals much more so than our coming together in a church gathering. I hope you're getting the impact of what I'm trying to say here. Now, I thought it important to clarify that before picking it up where we left off in the last message, so that people don't get the wrong idea. And when I use the term building the kingdom or the kingdom work, that it's just another preacher begging for money for his church or his ministry. The series is about you personally for the sake of the kingdom. The kingdom still, hopefully, is the recipient of the effect, but you first have to be the recipient of the wealth that then is used, whatever wealth it is that God provides us with, that is used then for the sake of the kingdom in an overall fashion. Now, in the last message, I began to discuss some of the biblical principles for economic prosperity, which, keep in mind, is a very relative term. Wealth is whatever Yahweh provides you when you are doing things His way. But the sad fact of the matter is that as a whole, we have been doing a poor job of doing things God's way. Now, we've been blessed in spite of it. You know, our God is so good to us and so great and so giving that even when we do things wrong, He still tends to bless us. He still loves us. It's like parents and their children. You know, there has yet to be a children except mine who do everything perfectly. Hardy har. But when my children are not perfect, I still want to bless them. I still want to give to them. Sometimes not in the way that they want to be given to them. But you're still wanting to bless your children. And even when we do things wrong, God has still blessed us. However, there can come a point that we can go get so far away that God says, I've had it. I can't bless anymore. Or the blessing comes in judgment instead. And we've still been blessed in spite of it. But how much more? How much more when we better comply to His biblical ethics and codes in whatever area it may be, but specifically as it applies to money and wealth? We've been doing a poor job as a whole. We have been doing a poor job. How much better it might be if our people would understand better His biblical principles. Now, as already discussed, bottom line biblical economic principle number one, the foundation of not only economic success, but success, period, is seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and everything else will be added to you. Everything else that you need at any given time. Okay, let's understand that. And again, that's relative for each one of us. God knows what's best for each of us. But that's bottom line. Seek first His kingdom and His righteousness. His commandments, statutes, and judgments, in other words. And all the rest is added to us. What we need. Now, don't, and I've tried to figure out how can I, because that is discussed in so many different ways and from so many different angles. I've thought, how in the world can I really stress that the way I believe it needs to be stressed? And I have yet to figure out how to do that other than just to tell you, and to tell you, don't pass over that lightly, because without that foundation, you have nothing to build upon but shifting sand. And no matter how great an edifice you might build to yourself, as many a man has, it will eventually, if not sooner, crumble all around you. Or worse yet, it will be used as so many men's great kingdoms have been, used against, opposed to Yahweh's kingdom and its furtherance here on earth as it is in heaven. That's how important it is that we do not pass over lightly, that we do everything we possibly can to put His kingdom before ours, that we seek first His kingdom, and that we're satisfied then with whatever part of His kingdom He then blesses us with. But it's His kingdom that we're seeking first. Biblical economic principle number two, which we only began to get into. In fact, I'm going to repeat some of what I shared with you in the last message because we ran out of time to complete it. But biblical economic principle number two, as I put it in the last message, is to, and again for emphasis, is to pursue, is to chase, is to hunt, is to trail, is to track wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. And initially you may think, well, why would that be a economic principle from the Bible? Well, hopefully you'll see as we get into this. In other words, do everything you possibly can to acquire all three of those attributes. Proverbs 3:13-16 again says, happy is the man that findeth wisdom and the man that getteth understanding. And that alone should be motivation to seek wisdom and understanding and knowledge, right? Who doesn't want to be happy? Everybody is seeking happy. It's just usually they're seeking it through the wrong means. You know, there's those who are becoming rich and prosperous, and they think it's their riches that are going to bring happiness. So that alone, happy is the man that findeth wisdom and the man that getteth understanding. And then it goes on to say, for the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver and the gain thereof of fine gold. She is more precious than rubies. And all things thou canst desire are not to be compared unto her. Wisdom and knowledge. And then it says, length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor. Wisdom, knowledge, and understanding are all, we talked about this in one of the previous messages, all, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge are all worth more than silver and gold. For the man who understands their real worth. And, then it goes on to say, they are also a basic principle for attaining gold and silver and other wealth of other sorts. They are a means. Isn't that what it said? Again, the latter part. Length of days is in her right hand. That's another reason, good enough reason. Happiness, length of days, long life. It's found in wisdom and knowledge, and in her left hand, riches and honor. And so indeed, wisdom, knowledge, and understanding are a biblical principle for attaining riches, retaining wealth, whatever it is that God has in mind for us in that area. Turn, as a second witness of that, a little bit lengthier passage, let's go to Proverbs chapter 8. Didn't have time to read all of this in the last message, so let me read it now. Proverbs chapter 8, good part of this chapter I want to read to you, and I just want you to try to glean the emphasis again that Solomon and all his wisdom is putting on wisdom and knowledge and understanding. Proverbs 8, beginning with verse 1, it says, does not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? She standeth in the top of the high places by the way in the places of the paths. She crieth at the gates, at the entry of the city, and at the coming of the doors. And I'm saying, hey, wisdom has never seemed to come that easy to me. But she's out there. She's crying out to us. If we just seek for her, if we pray for her, and we'd be willing to go through whatever God wants us to go through in order to get it. But it's there. It's crying out, Solomon, as Solomon describes it. Verse 4, unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of man. O ye simple, understand wisdom, and ye fools, be ye an understanding heart. Hear, for I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things. For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing forward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to them that find knowledge. Receive my instruction. Wisdom's instruction is what it's talking about here. Often that's interpreted outside of its context as meaning Yahweh. Of course, it eventually comes back to him, but it's specifically talking about wisdom. Receive my wisdom's instruction, and not silver. In other words, seek it first. And knowledge rather than choice gold, for wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and find out knowledge and wit of witty inventions. The fear of Yahweh is to hate evil, pride and arrogancy, and the evil way and the forward mouth do I hate. Counsel is mine, and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me kings reign, and princes decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. I think I read that in the last message, and I looked at the young people and I said, look for her early. Don't waste your youth on frivolity, as Solomon later points out in Ecclesiastes. Don't waste your time you have. It's now the time in your youth to seek these three like no other time. And I think I pointed out last week how I regret that I did just what I'm telling you not to do. That I didn't have somebody to inspire me and to encourage me to seek, to trail, to hunt, to track, to do everything I could to acquire wisdom and knowledge and understanding at a young age, as Solomon implores and encourages and admonishes you to do in this passage. What verse was that? 18, okay. I went further than that, didn't I? Verse 17. I'm at 18, you said. Okay, verse 18. Here is the repeat of what we just read earlier in chapter 6. He said, riches and honor are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I lead in the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of judgment, that I may cause those that love me to inherit substance, and I will, listen to this, and I will fill their treasures, or treasuries. And then jump down to verse 32 through the end of the chapter. Now therefore hearken unto me, again wisdom, O ye children, for blessed are they that keep my ways. Hear instruction, and be wise, and refuse it not. Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the post of my doors. For whoso findeth me findeth life, and shall obtain favor of Yahweh. But he that sinneth against me wrongeth his own soul, and all they that hate me love death. Man, now again, that's wealth alone. But not only that, but it's wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. That's one of the primary principles by which riches and wealth, and that God fills our treasuries with, or from, is when we seek those things. Listen to me. Knowledge and understanding will help you to obtain wealth, and wisdom will help you to retain wealth. So all three are very important. Many a son, as I pointed out last message as well, lacking in these attributes, have squandered an inheritance gained by a father who possessed those attributes and who used them to gain and establish his estate. And again, Proverbs 20:21, an inheritance gained hastily at the beginning will not be blessed in the end. It's gained by a son who doesn't have the same knowledge, understanding, and wisdom, especially, that the father had. He gains it hastily and has no foundation by which to even keep and retain it. Ecclesiastes 7:11 and 12, wisdom is good with an inheritance. An inheritance is great, but you better hope you have wisdom enough to keep it. He goes on, and profitable to those who see the sun, for wisdom is an defense as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. In other words, no use passing on an inheritance to an unwise son. Because it's wisdom with an inheritance that's good. You know, I have tried to impress upon my children as often as I can, and every chance that I get, the importance of their overall education, of seeking not just the basics, but trying to expand their knowledge and their understanding in every area that they possibly can, and to impress upon them right now the importance of that education as it pertains, not just for education's sake, but as it pertains to their ultimate success in life, especially, as it pertains, more importantly, to the kingdom of God and their place in that kingdom, their place in building and establishing that kingdom. You know, too many parents are only thinking, the vast majority of parents are only thinking about getting their children through school. That's what they're concerned about. That's their emphasis. Let's get them through school. And regrettably, it's not all that different with a lot of homeschooling parents as well. And I promised last message, I ended about at this point, I promised how I was going to share something from Andy's graduation. Oh, Andy's going to get uneasy back there. You can rest easy. But there was something that I recall. I don't recall a whole lot about his graduation ceremony, but there was one incident that I recall very much. The way it was set up was that the fathers of, if you weren't there, the fathers of the graduating, the graduates were to give a speech first about their son or their daughter, and then the graduate, they all gave their own speech as well. And it was supposed to be the fathers. Well, there was one family, one young man who was graduating whose father, it was some kind of emergency, I don't remember what it was, but who couldn't be there, and his mother had to fill in for him. And I'll never forget it, and I probably laughed the loudest on this, but she started her speech by explaining why the father couldn't be there, and that she was taking his place, and she said, "There's no one here happier than Mrs. Brown." Well, it so happened she was Mrs. Brown. She was thrilled that her son was graduating. And I could almost sympathize with the woman, and I'm sure with Junior Brown, she had good reason to say it. I don't know the young man, but I suspect she, like many mothers, had good reason to say it. You know, boy, am I ever happy this task is over. And maybe even more so for homeschooling parents, because the burden is on them. And I'm sure that wasn't her only emphasis, was of just getting him through school, but she was sure glad to get him through school, I'll tell you that much. But the education, the point being, the education of our children needs to be viewed with not only their completion in mind, and not only their future success in mind, but their place in the kingdom and with dominion in mind as well. Trying to establish in their minds that that's their purpose. That is the purpose of their education, is ultimately for the dominion of God here on earth in mind. And therefore, our children need to be impressed upon every chance we get that they need to do everything they can to learn everything they can about everything. Or at least everything presented to them at any given time. You know, not to go through school thinking, well, this isn't important. Because all of that accumulated knowledge and understanding, I've tried to impress this upon my oldest son, especially at this point in his life, as he's thinking about what he's going to do to his life, that everything you can gain in every area accumulates and all comes together in your ultimate success and whatever it is your place for the king in the kingdom and dominion for the kingdom is. Take advantage of gaining everything. Isn't that what Solomon is saying about knowledge and understanding? Gain it. I mean, that's what Solomon did. He looked for it everywhere he could find it. It's calling on the street corners. It's at the gates. It's everywhere available to us for any young man or woman or older man and woman who will continue to take advantage of it. And to do everything they can to learn everything they can about everything they can, and to become experts, or better yet, the expert in their chosen field. Because let me tell you, the world will set up camp at the doorstep of such a person when they become the expert in their chosen field. Whatever your pursuit in life, become the most knowledgeable, skilled person in that area, in your area. And who do you suppose those who want or need your product or your service are going to come to get it? They're going to come to the expert in that field to come and find it. In this day and age, we're not only talking about this day and age of the internet, we're not only talking about them coming to the doorstep of just the local people of the community coming, we're talking about the opportunity of the whole world coming to the door, your doorstep, to find, to gain, to gather in that knowledge and understanding. And especially if with that knowledge you have also honed wisdom, they're going to come to your doorstep. You know, knowledge and understanding and wisdom is just one of those things that it just kind of gets a, I don't know, bum rap's the wrong way to put it, but it certainly doesn't get its due of how important. I mean, we teach our children, you know, a little bit of, you know, we need to get knowledge, you need to be bright, you need to be, man, this is such a foundational principle of economics, of your success as a future head of your home or the head of your home now. It has not been, so many of us, most of us sitting here, except for the young people, have never had it stressed to us the way it should have been stressed to us. To make it that prize that it is, that's out there if we'd only seek and take advantage of it in our education early in life. Proverbs 22:29 says, "Seest thou a man diligent in his business? He shall stand before kings." I'm talking about the world coming before. Kings seek out such men. They will stand before kings. He will not stand before mean men. New King James Version puts it this way. Do you see a man who excels in his work? That New American Standard, do you see a man skilled in his work? He will stand before kings and he will not stand before obscure men. Knowledge, understanding, wisdom is what provides the means of being skilled, becoming the expert in your chosen field. I assure you, the man who becomes an expert in his field is a man who will be sought after, and all the more when he is known as a man of both wisdom and integrity. That kind of man. And that's what the world is, and with the public school system as it is, and the dumbing down of our children and the taking away of morality away from them, the world is finding a dearth of such people. And it's us who can raise up the kind of young men and women whom, again, the world will seek after, who not only have the knowledge and understanding, but with it wisdom and integrity and a work ethic and all that we should be instilling within our children. Seek first Yahweh's kingdom and His righteousness. Keep His commandments, statutes, and judgments. And pursue wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. And by those attributes alone, let me tell you, you will be well on your way to financial independence, if not financial wealth. Financial independence would be good enough in this day and age. Just to be independent of having to serve this world Babylonian system, this economic system which we find ourselves in. And if wealth is not Yahweh's choice for you, which it isn't always for all of us, wealth as we tend to think of wealth, with those two principles that I've just gone over alone established in your lives, you'll still be more successful than the majority of today's rich folks. Because, for the simple fact that wisdom, knowledge, and understanding alone is worth more than silver, gold, jewels, and all the wealth of the rest of the world. However, we are discussing financial success for the kingdom's sake. And if we're going to be financial wealthy or even just financially independent or just financially out of debt, then we need to do more than just principles 1 and 2. So, what do you suppose I've labeled as biblical economic principle number 3. Any ideas? Excuse me? Well, that's the overall emphasis. Any other ideas? Well, when I was first considering the order to put these principles in, I originally had tithing next in order. And no, not for the sake of this church or this ministry, but instead because of the great importance to individual financial success, or that it is to individual financial success, and therefore the success of Yahweh's kingdom work here on earth as well. However, I soon realized that in order to tithe of one's increase, one's got to first have an increase, right? In other words, we must first be gainfully employed, either by someone else or self-employed. Therefore, as important as I believe that the biblical economic principle of tithing is to economic success and prosperity, I realize that there are other principles that must precede the principle of tithing. In particular, the economic principle of the seven-day week. That is, one day of rest and 6 days of labor. And therefore, biblical economic principle number three is that four-letter word, W-O-R-K, work. And you say, boy, this is awful simple. Well, it's amazing how simple things are and how simple things can be and and I know you're complaining back there, Andy, thinking that's what you said, but I didn't hear it. and essentially that is what he said, make money. You got to work to make money, or at least most people do. And that's the way God intends it to be. W-O-R-K, work. Exodus 20, 9 through 10, it says, 6 days shall thou labor. You know, most people see the fourth commandment, as the Sabbath, that we must rest. And that is certainly the greatest emphasis of it. But don't miss the fact that a part of the fourth commandment is thou must labor 6 days. That doesn't mean you've got to labor 6 days at that which supplies money, because a lot of times we need the other day to labor around the home and keep up the homestead. And during an agricultural society, I mean, that was the intent of the whole thing, was doing the work around the homestead and doing whatever was necessary. But it says, Exodus 29 and 10, 6 days shall thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of Yahweh thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son nor thy daughter, thy manservant nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor the stranger that is within thy gates. In other words, not only does Yahweh expect us to Sabbath the seventh day, but he also expects us to work the preceding 6 days of the week. Paul wrote to the Christians, you all are familiar with this passage, to the Christians in Thessalonica in 2 Thessalonians 3:10. He said this, if anyone will not work, let him not eat. What a contrast to the United States. You know, talk about that's an economic principle. And no wonder the United States of America, for this reason and many other reasons, we're always doing things the opposite. Man tends to do everything opposite of the way God intends it to be. We have all these social programs that do just the opposite. We have these bleeding heart liberals who said, oh, this poor guy, you know, he's out here starving. Well, Paul, or God via Paul, said, let him starve. You know, if they won't work, then let them starve. No handouts to those who refuse to work. No handouts. If nothing else will get them to work, maybe starving will. Because God intends for man to work, because he knows the benefits thereof. Solomon also had much to say about the importance of labor and the folly of those who are lazy and indolent. Hopefully you still have Proverbs open there. Go to Proverbs, back to Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs chapter 6 and verses 6 through 8, at least to begin, and then we'll pick it up a little bit later from that at that point. Verse 6, it says, go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. We want to stop there. In other words, unlike many a man, an ant is self-motivated and doesn't need someone threatening him to rouse him to his work. You ever seen an ant out there with one of them standing on its back legs with a whip in its hand and driving the other ants? No, they're all scurrying around doing their job. So God says, what a great example. God provided us much in his creation as to be examples. And I believe he created the ants so that he could write this to us via Solomon. Look to the ant. He doesn't have to have a slave driver over him. You know, I've taught my children that if they don't want to be ruled over by dad and mom, that they simply need to become a law unto themselves. In other words, clean your room, do your schoolwork on your own initiative, and it will be like dad and mom aren't even there when it comes to laying down the law. Because we won't have to lay down the law. I never have to tell my daughter Katie to clean her room. Never, because she always has it clean. She's self-motivated. She's like an ant, scurrying around, doing it herself. She doesn't have to have dad or mom lording it over her. It just isn't necessary. In other words, be your own boss, and you'll never have to be bossed, even when in fact you have a boss. Pretty good idea. It's the same idea in 1 Timothy 1. That we find in 1 Timothy 1 and Galatians 5. In 1 Timothy 1, 9 through 10, it says, knowing this, that the law was not made for a righteous man. What does that mean? Especially for us non-antinomians. Us nomians, you know, who believe that God's law is still for us today. What does that mean? Well, it's the intent of what it's saying. Listen to again. I'll finish it off here. Knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous man, one who's already, he hasn't removed the laws from his life. He takes all of those laws unto himself. He's a law in that regard. He doesn't have to have the law lording over him. He doesn't have to have a whip, somebody whipping him to get him to do it. He's doing it because he wants to do it, out of love for God and his fellow man. Knowing this, that the law is not made for the righteous man, but then it says, but for the lawless, the disobedient, for the ungodly and for sinners, for the unholy and profane, for murderers of fathers and murderers of mothers, for manslayers, for whoremongers, for them that defile themselves with mankind, for men stealers, for kidnappers, for liars, for perjured persons, and if there be any other thing that is contrary to sound doctrine. That's who the law is a lord over. But for the righteous man, he doesn't need it. That's the same principle found in Galatians 5, 22 and 23. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Description of a righteous man. Against such things, there is no law. He doesn't need the law. He has a law. He is the law. He's carrying out the law. He doesn't need the law as a boss over him. He's a partner of the law himself. In other words, back to Solomon's comparison or contrast in many regards, ants are smarter than some men. While many a man needs a master, an overseer, and a manager, there has never been, once again, an ant that has not been self-motivated. And therefore, ants are sometimes smarter than some men. Go back to Proverbs chapter 6, picking it up with verse 9. It says, how long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Get a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. Sleep. That is, waste or squander your life away rather than being gainfully employed, and you are your own thief, stealing the bread from your own mouth. Teach your children, those of us who have them, a good work ethic. That needs to be one of the primary instructions as we raise our children. Not just teaching them how to read and to do math and so forth, but teaching them a good work ethic. Or by default, you're instructing them to steal from themselves, their future families, and in fact from the kingdom as well. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10 and verses 4 through 5. It says, he becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in the harvest is a son that causeth shame. Simply put, the slacker or the loafer will be poor unless he happens to win the lottery or has a rich uncle, which the odds are against ever happening. And being a slacker, even then, he is probably not going to be able to hold on to such riches even if he gets them through that means. But it's not likely that it's going to happen anyway. On the other hand, do not just work, but be diligent in your work. And Yahweh promises riches, at least as a general rule. Again, there are exceptions depending upon what His plan for your particular life is. So, with that in mind, just what is diligence? Well, let me tell you, here is what it's not. There was a foreman that came to the job site and found his laziest worker carrying 4 bricks while all the other men were carrying 8 bricks. And he said, why is it that all these other guys are carrying 8 bricks and you're only carrying 4? And the guy responding, well, I guess it's just that they're too lazy to make 2 trips. Now, that's not diligence. The Hebrew word karutz, that's translated diligence, is an interesting word in that it's a word that sometimes translated gold in the Old Testament. That's interesting. That's interesting in and of itself. The 2000 Webster's Collegiate Dictionary defines diligent with the following terms. It says, consistent and earnest effort to accomplish what is undertaken. Now, I especially like Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 10, where it says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, for there is no activity or planning or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol, in the grave, where you are going. You're going to be there. In other words, you've got one chance to get it done. And therefore, whatever you're going to do, you had better get it done now, because it ain't going to happen in the grave. Excuse my English. And that could be our habitation tomorrow. It's a verse that also deals with procrastination. We need to do it now, because we don't know what tomorrow holds. Furthermore, if you're not going to get it done now to the best of your ability, then you might as well be in the grave. Give me another application of the same verse. Now go to Colossians 3, because I really don't believe that you can take Ecclesiastes 9:10, although I know this is Solomon's intent, but it really should be coupled with what we find in Colossians. Keep your finger in Proverbs and turn to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 and verses 23 through 24. Not only do we need to do it with all of our might, but we need to have in mind why we're doing it. Colossians 3, starting with verse 23, it says, servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God, verse 23, and whatsoever you do, do it heartily. That's what Solomon said, with all your might, as to the Lord and not unto men. Do it unto the Lord. Now, the immediate context is dealing with servants in this passage, or in our modern vernacular, with employees. You know, it's maybe not exactly the same thing, but in modern days, we have employees more than we have servants. The servant was an employee in a sense, but we have employees today. And that's what it's talking about. Read verse 22, the immediate verse preceding what we just read. I should have read 23 and 24. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and unto men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. But it's verse 22, which I already read, says, servants, obey in all things your masters. The context is dealing with servants or with employees, that we're to do it, whatever we do. It's a part of seeing that the overall perspective of what we're doing is for the kingdom. And I'm doing it for the Lord. This is my means of helping to establish the kingdom, having to establish the kingdom first within my home, my household, for my children, for the sake of their inheritance, and the kingdom as a whole, to have an effect in a greater way upon this world, and the kingdom effect we'd like to have there. It was the very kind of diligence that Paul wrote the Colossians about that made Hezekiah a great king. Hezekiah was one of the very few that were great kings. Certainly wasn't perfect. Certainly needed to have a better long-range vision than he did for his children and his grandchildren. But he was in many ways one of the few great kings that ruled Judah, the kingdom or the house of Judah. In 2 Chronicles 31:20-21, we find out why it was that he was a great king, or at least one of the reasons. And it says, "And thus Hezekiah did throughout all Judah, and he did what was good, right, and true before Yahweh his God. He sought first his kingdom and his righteousness." And then it says, "In every work which he began in the service of the house of God, in law and in commandment, seeking his God, seeking first the kingdom of God, he did with all his heart, and he prospered." He prospered because he sought first his kingdom, and he did everything he did with all his heart, with all his strength. Now, it's easy. I'm going to be the first to admit to you that there are times in my life where I don't do everything with all my heart. We're all human, and we're all going to fail in that. And this just needs to be a reminder to all of us that whatever we do, whatever we put our hand to, we need to first do it for the Lord. And that alone will help us to do it with all our strength, soul, heart, and mind. And, boy, it's easy to get lax with ourselves and to just not do it the way we should do. But it's diligence. It's working diligently. In fact, turn to Proverbs chapter 12. Proverbs chapter 12, and I want to read verse 24. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 24, it says, "The hand of the diligent shall bear rule, but the slothful shall be under tribute." Now here's the application. Not only does diligence in your work hold the key to making you wealthy, or possibly wealthy if that's God's will for your life, but eventually such men rise to the top of any organization or profession, and they will once again find themselves the boss rather than being bossed. Isn't that what it's talking about? Again, verse 24, "The hand of the diligent shall bear rule." They'll be the boss. They rise. Such men rise to the top. And I especially like verse 27, verse 27 in the New American Standard Version, but let me read it to you first in the King James. It says, "The slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting." You know, I don't know how many times I've seen or heard of hunters that have gone out, and they're only out there for the hunt. They're not about to even clean what they get, and they throw it along the roadside. I think it was over by Torrington last year that they found, I forget how many dozens of geese that somebody just dumped alongside the road. And they just didn't want to take the time. You know, they wanted just the pleasure, but not the means of the work that was involved in taking advantage of what they had hunted for. And so the slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting. But particularly I want you to look at the latter part where it says, "But the substance of a diligent man is precious." Now here's how the New American Standard puts it. It says, "A slothful man does not roast his prey, but the precious possession of a man is diligence." You know, I wonder how many people have quizzed, "What's the precious possession of a man? What is the precious possession of a man?" I wonder how many of them would answer diligence. But that's what Solomon said. Diligence certainly is at least one of man's precious possessions if he will hone that, if he'll make that a part of his life, that he'll apply diligence to everything that he does. Be diligent in whatever your hand finds to do at any given time. Do it with all of your might unto the Lord every day, every time, and even when you're possibly not the brightest guy on your block. You will nonetheless succeed. It's inevitable. Whereas a fellow with a much higher IQ who does not have diligence will ultimately fail, or at least not succeed as far as he should. Now, I will have more to say about work in the next message. I'm sure you didn't think I could get it all done in one message. I'll have more to say in the next message about work, but let me conclude this message with a track that I picked up somewhere along the line. I don't even know where I got it or how long ago I had it, but it was in my file. And on the front of it, you may not be able to read the front of it, but you can see there's a picture of a bag and there's money and coins and stuff there, and it says, "The secret of how to make money." The secret of how to make money. What do you think it says on the inside? And you can see that, right? Go to work. On the back, it has the following: work. If you are poor, work. If you are rich, continue to work. If you are burdened with seemingly unfair responsibilities, work. If you are happy, keep right on working. Idleness gives room for doubts and fear. If disappointments come, work. If sorrow overwhelms you and loved ones are not true, work. When faith falters and reason fails, just work. When dreams are shattered and hope seems dead, work. Work as if your life were in peril. It really is. No matter what ails you, work. Work faithfully. Work with faith. Work is the greatest remedy available. Work will cure both mental and physical afflictions. Thank God every morning when you get up that you have something to do which must be done, whether you like it or not. Being forced to work and forced to do your best will breed in you temperance, self-control, diligence, strength of will, content, and 100 other virtues which the idle will never know. I like that. It maybe seems simple, but it's an often overlooked economic principle for wealth, is to work. And I really had thought about, between every one of these principles, adding another principle that said work. You know, go to the one principle and then go to the next principle is work, and go to the next principle and the next principle is work. Put work in between every one of these principles and it's guaranteed success. Biblical economic principle number one: seek first His kingdom and His righteousness. Biblical economic principle number two: seek wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. And biblical economic principle number three is simply work. All three secrets, if you will, biblical principles on how to make money to be wealthy for the sake of God's kingdom here on earth as it is already in heaven. And there's more to come, of course. More principles that are found in God's Word. In fact, I hadn't thought of one, and it was in the shower this morning, and I thought of another one that'll probably be the next one in line after we get done with work, that is, which may take all of the next message and maybe more. Probably not. Probably just part of the next one. Anyway, I hope these so far have benefited you, and I hope that what's to come will benefit us even more in the kingdom as a whole. That, again, it being principles of establishing His kingdom, His will, His righteousness here, instead of man's as it is today. What a mockery of God we have today. What a mess we have today. Simply because we've avoided His principles as found in His holy word that work so perfectly if we'd only put them into practice. Let's stand and we'll close this in prayer. Our Heavenly Father, we're thankful again to be in Your presence. Thankful for Your word and thankful for Your instructions for our lives. Father, forgive us where we have failed. We have all failed. We all fall short, but help us to strive to correct that which is wrong in our lives. Help us to be diligent men in seeking first Your kingdom and Your righteousness, and being all that we can be for Your sake, for our families, and future generations of our people. We ask these things and ask Your blessing upon this message once again, wherever it might go, and that it would, Father, help to establish Your kingdom and Your will, and that it would bring glory and praise and honor to Your name. It's in Yeshua the Christ that we pray these things. Amen.